Welcome to the Fund2000.com Real Estate Podcast. My name is Chuck Hamm, and today we're going to talk about FHA and VA loans and negotiating offers and some of the issues to look out for when we're negotiating those offers. Welcome. Thanks for listening. Today's issue is actually a lot broader than FHA and VA amendatory clause. I'm going to try to tell you, give you some information to help you write better offers. Whether you're an agent, a buyer, or your seller looking at offers, this information should help you. And especially in the hot market that we have in most parts of the country, most parts of California, most of the markets where our office works. So if you're in an urban area or an area, suburban area where there's, average density, you're probably in a market that is getting more offers per listing. So there's more buyers per home available, which is bidding up the value of properties that are making it to the market. So if you're a seller in one of these nice markets, then you're most likely going to get multiple offers. It does vary from neighborhood to neighborhood. If you have age restrictions, if you have maybe you're in a rural area, there's differences. So let's not say this applies to everybody. But today we want to talk a little bit about how to negotiate offers and how to present your offer as strong as possible in competitive environments. And we deal with this every day, and we're talking to our clients every day about it. And it's a problem. It's difficult. Buyers can get very frustrated because they write offers over and over and they're not getting accepted. So after 20 years in the business, I've learned a little bit about how to make your offer as competitive as possible. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So one of the most or two of the most common kind of loans out there are the FHA and the VA loans. And there is something a little bit different about those loans because these are government backed or let's say government guaranteed loans. They're under government scrutiny, government programs, and therefore there's a little bit extra law involved. And that's where the FHA and VA amendatory clause comes into play. And you cannot just ignore that. I see a lot of agents and buyers ignoring it because they just don't know the law. They don't know what this FHA and VA amendatory clause is. So in a hot market, you might want to make your offer as competitive as possible by saying, we're not going to require any contingency on my offer for the appraisal. We might still get an appraisal, but we're not going to walk from this transaction after, 10 days, whatever number of days you're going to give yourself to get this appraisal done and make sure that you're still happy with the value of the property. We're not going to walk from this transaction, so we have no contract protection for the appraisal. Well, that's called the appraisal contingency, and what the FHA and VA amendatory clause is saying, law is saying, you can't do that. Not if you're using an FHA loan or a VA loan. So I hope that's clear. Every other transaction can do that. You're allowed to negotiate these things, and you want to negotiate these things. You want to have protections as a buyer going in that the loan is going to be able to close, and the lender is not going to close on the loan if the property is not worth what you're contract says. It's not what you're negotiating. So if you're negotiating $1 million purchase price and the appraisal says it's only worth $900,000, you're going to be subject to the terms of the loan still, which might say you have to have a 20% down payment. That changes your down payment. Your loan to value is a critical component of the loan. And that's why you're trying to figure out what the property is worth, because the bank, the lender is not going to loan just whatever you say. They're going to check the value of the property because they have an interest in the property, and they're not going to want to loan any more than 96.5%, maybe 90%, maybe 80%. Depends on what the loan program is. So that's why also the federal government has decided that in order to protect FHA and VA buyers, which tend to be minority buyers, buyers that have less that are less savvy and less trained on these things, or less knowledgeable on how to negotiate contracts, or they're getting agents that are less competent, possibly. The federal government decided that we're just going to require, you cannot, even if you put it in the contract that you're waiving the appraisal contingency, we're not going to allow it. It's just that part of the contract is not valid. That's the way it works. So it doesn't matter what you agree to. Now, in every other contract, if there's no FHA or VA loan involved, and the FHA and VA amendatory clause does not come into play, then you can waive the appraisal contingency. I wouldn't recommend you do it, but you can. If you don't have a loan, then you don't need the appraisal contingency, but you might still want it just to make sure that you're looking at the value objectively. It's one way to look at it. Investors out there, one way that they leverage their cash position is by writing offers with no appraisal contingency, no loan contingency, no inspection contingency. Basically, they investigate the property, make sure that they're going to be able to fix it up, rent it out, do whatever they want to do with it. And it's their business. They do this really well, and they have cash, and they leverage that to get a better discount on the property. And why do you get a discount? Because, well, the seller knows that when they get to the appraisal with a different kind of buyer who has a loan that requires an appraisal, and the contract requires the appraisal, the seller knows that there's a chance that that buyer is going to have to renegotiate the contract or walk, and that's why they have to write that protection into the contract. It's called a contingency or a condition of the contract. You want those kinds of protections if you're a buyer. If it's your business and you would rather have the discount and try to negotiate aggressively the price by waiving those conditions and contingencies, that's your business, and that's good business if you know how to do it. So that's the issue here. So what if you're in this competitive market and you're a buyer that's really wanting to use a VA loan or FHA loan because you're getting the best deal that way. And let's say you have minimal down and you don't have a lot of options, and you might be stuck. You might not be able to compete with other offers out there, other investors, other people who have down payments who are using different kind of loans. But let's say that you can get approved for a conventional loan, even though you'd rather use your VA or your FHA. If we can get you an approval for a conventional loan, you can use that in writing the offer. That's how we're going to get you around this if you want to. Now, if you do this, you have to realize that if for whatever reason you lose your ability to qualify for the different type of loan that you actually plan on using, or interest rates go up or whatever, you might be stuck with the loan terms that you put on the offer. So that's one thing that we will advise you on. But the issue that we're trying to resolve is getting your offer accepted in the first place. Let's say that you're one of these borrowers or buyers, or you've had friends that they're trying to buy in a competitive market, and you want to have an attractive offer as possible. And you know that one of the ways that you can do that is by removing contingencies. Well, we have good news for you. We can get you approved for different kinds of loans. Could be if you qualify for a conventional, we'll get you approved for a conventional. If you qualify for FHA, we'll get you approved for that if that's what you want. If you qualify for VA, same deal. We'll get you approved for all the different kinds of loans that you think you want to do. We'll run the numbers, make sure that they look good to you, and then we'll use the approval that looks most attractive to the seller. Now, as long as you get that contract accepted, the seller's not going to care ultimately which loan you go with. They just want to get paid. It might matter which loan you go with if you end up having problems during the transaction with one of the types of loans. Then you might have to resort, as your last resort, the type of loan that you put on the contract, because that's what you're stating, that you're telling them. So you have to be careful about this, and we'll help you be careful. But ultimately, the seller doesn't care how they get paid. It doesn't matter which loan you use. As long as you close on time and as long as you do everything you say you're going to do. So now, looking at the offer that we write, it's going to be more attractive if you have some funds to show as a down payment and you can write a conventional offer. And if you can write the offer with no loan contingency at all, there will still be an appraisal contingency. So it doesn't completely resolve it. But if you're willing to provide our office with all the income and credit and assets and all the documentation that we're going to need in order to write your mortgage loan, we can get you an approval so that you do not need any loan contingency. So we're going to look at this very carefully. We're going to practically underwrite the whole loan up front before the offer. That might be what gets your offer ahead of the others and gets you to win the property. So one of our banks calls this process their true approval. There's others that do similar things, but basically they authorize us after we've gone through the underwriting process upfront to write the offer with no loan contingency. We still put the appraisal contingency in there. There are some transactions where we know upfront that the appraisal will be waived. So that is a possibility too. After going through this underwriting process, we've already got some data on the property. If you've already chosen a property and our automated valuation models are stating that the value is good, we already know that at a particular price, we will not need an appraisal. And if that's the case, we could write a no loan contingency, no appraisal contingency offer. Now that's kind of rare in right now in this market where prices are bidding up multiple offers and the prices are getting a little bit too high for that kind of thing. That's risky for the banks to do that, but they do it sometimes. So we look at that. If you're looking for a real estate sales office that can do this for you, that's us, sold2000.com. And in partnership with our mortgage side, which is fund2000.com, California Mortgage Professionals. This is what we do for our clients. We help you get the most competitive offer that you possibly can in a hot market. We also help you save money. We also help consult with you to make sure that you're getting the lowest interest rates, avoiding mortgage insurance where possible. The FHA and VA amendatory clause can be a real problem. And there's another little angle here that we can just discuss briefly. If you're in a situation where you have to use your FHA loan and you're not going to qualify for a conventional, if you have a down payment and let's say it's more than just the minimum, let's say that the minimum is three for a VA loan is zero down, FHA is 3.5%. If you use the minimums, then you're kind of stuck. That appraisal is going to come in, let's say it's going to come in low, and you're using a minimum down payment. The seller is going to look at that and say, okay, we don't have any wiggle room. But let's say you have a 10% down payment. You don't even have to use it all, but you're willing to show those funds and use those funds if needed. We can persuade the seller that you have the funds if it doesn't appraise, even though the appraisal is required and even though law requires you to have the appraisal contingency. Maybe we can persuade the seller that we got to use this kind of loan and therefore we have to have this appraisal contingency because of the amendatory clause. But that doesn't keep you from still paying the difference. So let's say the appraisal comes in low and you have the funds to pay the difference. So let's say you have $1 million purchase price, which is not a good example because the federal loan limits might not let you go that high. But it depends on where you're at, and FHA definitely doesn't go that high. But you can still agree to pay the difference, even though you have the protection in the contract. So the appraisal comes in at $900,000. Again, bad example, but so your loan on the FHA loan is going to be 900, take away, that 3.5%, but you have $150,000 in a hundred and whatever thousand dollars to pay the down payment, and that resolves the problem if the seller can accept that. So if that doesn't make sense, we might want to talk about that more in detail, run the numbers for you. I should probably just calculate it. Let's say that you have a contract price of $1 million, but it appraised only at $900,000. And let's say that you have $150,000 that you're willing to spend on your down payment, and you could persuade the seller that even though you're using this FHA loan and even though there's an appraisal contingency, you've got the funds to pay this up to $150,000 down payment. You can put that on the contract. You can persuade the seller into accepting your contract because the appraisal contingency isn't really an issue. You've got the money. So usually you know up front what the property is probably going to appraise for. As real estate agents, we do that. We check your comparable sold properties. So even if you negotiate $1 million purchase price, you probably know that the last recent sold property that's similar was maybe around $900,000 for this hypothetical, and you're using an FHA loan which only lends 96.5% of the lesser of the purchase price or the appraised value. That's the rule. Which number do you use for determining the loan to value for your loan program? Well, for FHA, the rule is the lesser of the appraised value or the contract price. So if your appraised value is $1 million and your contract price is $900,000, then you're a winner. You got a good deal because you appraised for so much higher, and you only need to loan the loan to be based on the smaller amount. But you still have to, pay the full amount. Let's go back to the hypothetical $1 million, and then it appraises for only $900,000. Your bank, your lender, using an FHA loan is only going to be willing to lend $868,500 because that's 96.5 percent of $900,000, which was the lower of the two numbers, $900,000 appraised value. So that means you're going to have to come up with $131,500 down payment, and you win. You got the property because you showed the funds. So I hope that makes sense. I know that's a lot of numbers and mental gymnastics. So the idea is that we think about these things for you, and we know how to be competitive. We know how what the other offers are going to look like. We know what the other agents are doing and what they're not doing, and they're not really making their clients' offers competitive. It's hard to compete with somebody who's paying cash and is willing to pay the price. There's no way around that. But we do have ways to make your offer more competitive by thinking about it, by analyzing it, by looking closely at what your capabilities are financially, and also what products we have available to you. And that's a lot. We have a lot of products available to get your offers approved and to get around these, issues, like the FHA and VA amendatory clause and appraisal contingencies. If we can do a no loan contingency offer for you, we'd be happy to. We'll work together. We become partners in getting through a real estate transaction, and that's our business, and that's something we love. Wrapping it up here, the FHA and VA amendatory clause, it's the requirement that you have to have an appraisal contingency. You don't get to get around it. Don't fool yourself and think you can negotiate that out of the deal. A lot of agents don't know that, and especially the buyers and sellers don't know that. So it's our job as agents to know that. And let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and look at buy now versus buy later if you're a renter. All right, so let's do a buy now or buy later scenario. I want to try to include these in the podcast every once in a while, or maybe on every podcast, just to give somebody or some kind of calculation like that's just relevant to for people who are thinking about buying. And I think there's a lot of people out there who would love to buy, but either they're afraid of affordability, interest rates, the difficult market out there. So this information might, tell you to move or sit tight. For the area where I work, Ventura County, this is a pretty real scenario, and I want to make these as real as possible instead of versus outlandish hypotheticals. So let's say you're able to buy now at $900,000. You found a property that you like, and the interest rates today, we'll use 6.625. I think we're a little bit lower than that, but they've been kind of moving around too at the same time. Your loan amount will use a 10% down payment, so $90,000. And a 30-year loan, hazard insurance at 0.35. All those things are getting calculated into your payment. So if you were to buy now with 10% down at that price, your principal and interest would be $5,187, taxes probably a little under 900 per month, and then insurance probably under $250 per month. And you would have PMI, which is primary mortgage insurance. If you could do 20%, you could drop this $304. So the total payment is on the high side, $6,600, because this is an estimate designed to give it padded a little bit. You would have to bring to close on the high side $113,000. That's for our office. That is really on the high side, because we only charge one basis point. That's 1% of the loan amount. So if you were to compare that now, the question is, should you buy now or not? And so you're going to compare this to your whatever you're paying in rent. So around here, maybe this house that you're buying for $9,000 is renting for $3,500. You're going to look at this payment and think, man, I'm happy to be saving $3,000 per month. So now let's add another variable here. How would you feel if you knew, based on today's appreciation rate, which we can assume that $900,000 house will appreciate, based on what the market's doing right now, at least 4%. I mean, I'm looking down here, Goldman Sachs projected for the next 12 months 1.9%, Freddie Mac 2.8%, Zillow projected 3.5%, and the Mortgage Brokers Alliance or Association, whatever they are, is projecting 4.1. I think they all projected very conservatively because they're afraid of recession and economic problems, and we're still talking about that a lot. So, but let's just use the higher number here, 4%. So the $900,000 house in 1 year at 4% appreciation rate is going to be worth $936,000. That's 4% higher than the previous year that when you bought it at $900,000. So in 1 year, you've added $36,000 to your net worth. That's pretty good. If we add another year, that 4% doubles and adds a little bit. So $973,444 after 2 years at a 4% appreciation rate. I think 4% is conservative. Depends on the market that you're in. So these are national averages that I was quoting before: Goldman Sachs 1.9, Freddie Mac 2.8, Zillow 3.5, and MBA at 4.1. And those national averages are very different than what, for example, our market has been doing. Our market has seen up to 20% appreciation rate. I mean, it just depends on when and which market. It depends on which city you're in, even. Which neighborhood? So you could do a lot better, you could do worse. I think 4% is a pretty conservative number. But again, going back to the first question, should you buy? What is your payment versus what you would rent? You might have a $3,500 rent. Hopefully, you can lock it in and not have a bunch of rent increases. Depends on your landlord and if you're staying in the same place, and if you could stay in the same place for a long time and just keep saving $3,000 per month. That's probably money well invested, assuming you're investing that money and not just spending it. If you're investing it in the stock market, you compare that appreciation rate to what the appreciation of your stock portfolio has done. How much money have you made on your other investments, whatever they are? Real estate's done pretty well, so we can just leave it at that. If you have any questions about any of this, contact me. You can email Chuck at fund2000.com, or you can get on the website. Our phone numbers are there, and we'll schedule a time to talk. And I look forward to it. Thanks for listening.